and welcome to Film Kid Asks, the podcast where I ask questions to working professionals in the film industry from the perspective of someone just getting started. My name is Jordan, and today I'm joined by First AD and Second AD duo Mark Ambry and Martin Peterson that have worked on projects together like Heartland, Diablo, and Winona Earp. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
So as a student, a lot of our projects will have a single AD. So for those who don't know, what is the difference between a first AD and a second AD, and what are some of the key parts of each position? Do you want to start, Mark?
Sure. Our two positions together kind of work in tandem, kind of cover each other off. I'm kind of more involved in, you know, maybe the intricate details of the actual process of the filming, and a second AD would be kind of looking after the, keeping the home fires burning, so to speak, while I'm off being a goofball. Like, I always think that the second AD schedules the prep and the first AD kind of schedules the shoot. And once a show is started and we're underway, you know, I'll kind of dive into the script aspect of it and just start tearing it apart with the director and the various, you know, creative people, get some meetings underfoot, kind of start to figure out what the whole thing's about, and going off and kind of figuring out how we're going to shoot the project. And then the particulars, all the important stuff that needs to happen to make that film happen, Martin's usually, as a second AD, would be, you know, doing all the responsible adulting, I guess.
So what does that look like, Martin?
So yeah, well, Mark, at the early stages of prep, he's usually out finding locations with the director, working with the production designer and the location manager, and working on like big picture type stuff like that. And while he's off doing that, I'm doing a more detailed breakdown of the script and trying to figure out kind of the minute details that might need to be addressed down the line. Like if it says, for example, a character has to drive a car, I'll make a note of that. I got to make sure that that person who's cast in that role can actually drive a vehicle, which would then go into what kind of vehicle can they drive? Does it have to be a stick shift or an automatic? And it goes into a whole bunch of details like that in terms of trying to vaguely put in, you know, background extras, what I think might be there, just preliminary type stuff, just to kind of what I like to see start the conversation so that these questions can then be answered further on down the line.
Yeah, like, you know, with the scripts, kind of the normal process is, say in the context of a television series or a movie, you get the script, as Martin said, you know, I'll be out location scouting or doing something. And while that's happening, Martin is taking that script and he's inputting into the Movie Magic scheduling program. He's breaking down every scene and he's putting all the elements of the scene into the program. So, you know, everything from props, and he'll give a little description of what the scene's about, what actors are in it, you know, just all of that stuff. And a lot of it, you know, early on, you don't know, have answers to that stuff yet. So he'll put in like placeholders, you know, we'll put in that we need background performers in this scene. We just don't know how many, or we'll probably want to have some cars in this scene. We just don't know what types and how many. So he's coming up with all that stuff. And then, you know, I'll come back from wherever I've been and there's like a laundry list of questions that have been percolating in his head. And, you know, the goal always is before you start shooting it, ideally you don't have any more questions.
Right.
So you can just concentrate on shooting it. Spoiler, that never happens, but
but that is the goal. It's always the goal.
But that is the goal. So yeah, Martin is, you know, he's really dealing with the minutiae of the whole thing and, you know, kind of concentrating on the logistics of putting it together so that when it is time to go, we haven't discovered on the day, oh, that actor that has to drive and pull into this parking spot, they don't know how to drive a standard, you know, just stuff that you don't think about until you have to. And it's like, oh, why didn't we think about that? He's the guy that thinks about it if he's doing a good job.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So what are the skills that a person should have to do well as a first AD?
Well, you know, so much of it is personality, really. I think a lot of it is you have to have a personality that is willing to kind of be all things to all people at different times. You have to deal with an actor differently than you would deal with someone in your department or a producer. And it's really, it's motivating people when they need to be motivated. A lot of it is organization and scheduling and execution. It's kind of looking at this, you know, whether it's a TV show or a movie, just being able to kind of look at it for the sum of its parts and just tear it apart and rebuild it into a schedule that you can shoot. And so you have to be able to just keep going, because lots of times just, you know, you're trying to figure out how to shoot something and you just keep on running into a wall, because if you can't figure it out, there's always something that is an impediment, and eventually you'll crack it and it's great. Basically, you know, you just have to be someone that can give harsh realities to people when they need to hear it and keep going. And you have to have a really good bladder, because you don't really get to go pee ever, and be able to stand for a long time. Got to be able to stand for at least 12 hours a day.
So what do you think the skills are that a person should have to do well as a second AD?
Biggest ones I find are time management and communication. And nowadays, like, just to date myself, I mean, I've been a second AD since 1998. So the communication styles have changed. It's actually been a lot easier if you know them properly. But between telephone, text, and email, and face-to-face, don't ever discount that. That's just as important. Just constantly keeping people in the loop on what's going on, because it's a constantly evolving thing. It may sound a little cheesy, but the filmmaking process is definitely organic, and it is constantly changing. Like Mark was talking about, just on a small scale, if he's out location scouting and I'm in the office, between rewrites and things they found out for certain logistics, everything always feeds into one another. So it's constantly keeping all that stuff together. Like Mark might hear in passing a director say, oh yeah, well, you know, make sure that this cup is going to be black, and then that'll get passed to me, and then I pass that to props, and da 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 da. So it's constantly keeping people involved and educated in the differences and the nuances that are happening throughout the process. So to me, it's time management and communication. That's the most important parts that I feel make a second AD successful.
First AD and second AD are, they're kind of, it's strange in that it's almost like you share a brain in a lot of ways, especially, you know, if you've worked with that second and first team, if they've worked together a lot. Like me and Martin throughout the years have come and gone, but we've worked together on quite a few projects, and it evolves into this situation where it's just, you don't even have to speak about things. It just kind of, you know, I know he's got this handled and he knows that I'm doing my thing or whatever it is, but so much feeds into one another, and so much of it is logistics. Like, I'll give you an example. You know, you'll be out on a location scout or something with the director and production designer, director of photography, and everybody will be in love with a certain element of it. And then you got to be the person to go, yeah, but then there's train tracks right there. I wonder if, like, how often that train goes by. And, you know, so a lot of times you're like the Debbie Downer of the party. But, you know, on the day, that's when I think an AD is very valuable, is when you've thought about the things that no one else has, because people are so thankful for that. They might not want to hear it when you're in the dream mode, which I understand. But on the day when, you know, the chips are down, you're going to want to know that someone has thought of those details, kind of thing. And if you've thought about them ahead of time, you can come up with workarounds too, rather than trying to call the railway in 5 minutes and getting an answer. You know, maybe you have 5 weeks to get an answer and solve it. So you can't start thinking about that stuff too early in the process, really.
Right. So kind of going off of that, what are some of the hardest parts of the job for each of you?
Do you want to start, Mar?
Yeah.
Don't say dealing with me, by the way.
One of the hardest parts, I guess, trying to think about things on the fly, because like Mark said, I mean, we always try to come to the best possible solution, but sometimes things happen. Anything from weather to somebody's sick, something didn't arrive via FedEx that we need, and just trying to come up with a new plan quickly, but that also makes sense. The one thing Mark and I have in common is we haven't been on those projects where you can just throw money at the problem. So we've got to come up with realistic workarounds and trying to figure out the best way to keep moving things forward. That's probably one of the most difficult parts. You try to be prepared for the worst case scenario, but sometimes you can't even imagine what that is. And then it happens and then you got to adjust to it. So
yeah, because it is kind of a living, breathing thing and it is changing. You are always adapting. I mean, everything from a thunderstorm to like Martin said, you know, an actor being late or whatever it is, it's all challenging. And usually at the end of the day, the producers or the studio, while they might sympathize with whatever position you're in because of whatever has happened, at the end of the day, their expectation is that you're still going to finish on time. And so, you know, that makes it, okay, now we all of a sudden we have to find a half hour in this day that we we didn't need to worry about before. So you start thinking on your feet, everything from maybe do we reschedule something, or do we just figure out a more efficient way, or do we alter something? All of a sudden you wanted to do a scene in, you know, 5 shots, and can we do it in 2? That sort of thing. And it's when things start happening quickly because you have to make up time, then you really have to start thinking on your feet, and you got to get that information out there. So, you know, for example, it might be all of a sudden we got to bring in an actor that we didn't think we'd have to bring them in for 4 hours. All of a sudden we have to bring them in an hour and a half. And so it's always just being able to kind of keep your wits about you and keep the machine going, because at the end of the day, it boils down to the AD department usually are the ones that have to make sure that all the pieces kind of fit together at the end. And it's tough. And you also have to just manage so many different personalities, I think is also a very challenging aspect. A lot of times you'll get in situations where there is maybe not great relationships between some of the key production personnel or creative personnel. And because the show still must go on, you've got to manage those personalities in such a way that they can still do their job, and you can get them to do what you need them to do without, you know, there being a homicide on set. So I always feel like you have to take the time to get to know the people, the crew who you're working with. It's all about respect, and it's a good philosophy anyways, but if people know that you're invested in them, then they're going to invest in what you need to accomplish. So
yeah, for sure. So being an AD, it's a bit of a thankless job at times, certainly. So kind of the opposite of that, what are the most fulfilling parts of your job?
Well, I mean, for me, it's the puzzle of taking a script and going, okay, how do we shoot this? You know, some shows you'll have all the time and money in the world, and you don't even know like how to schedule it, because it's like, I've never had this much time to do something before. I mean, and then there's some where it's like, how are we going to do this in 15 days? This is insanity. So really, it's just tearing that script apart and putting it back together and working with primarily the director and trying stuff. It's like you look for solutions. If stuff isn't working, it's like, well, instead of, you know, this scene having this actor and then this actor come, and then there's another scene where this actor who was just in this scene tells someone that he just learned in this scene, can that person just come into the scene and can it just be one scene? Or, you know, what if we shot this scene in this location instead of that location so that we don't have to move there? So it's just, you know, meeting the challenges that productions are always giving you and trying to solve them. We're in a kind of a world now with streaming and stuff. There's never been more stuff being made, but there's also this underlying pressure, you know, unless you're the right filmmaker at the right streaming service, you're not going to have countless funds to make your show. So there's always this pressure now to want it quicker and they want it faster, and just, you know, rising to that challenge and looking for those cheats to meet that and helping the directors achieve that is one of the most rewarding things for me. And just, you know, seeing stuff that you planned, like a big complicated stunt sequence or something that you spent weeks planning, and then, you know, it goes off without a hitch, that's rewarding. Making sure that nobody gets injured or hurt or worse on a film set is also, you know, rewarding, because that's another big part of our job, is we're responsible for everybody still having 10 fingers and 10 toes at the end of the day and being able to go home. So having all that stuff kind of collude together, and you want the director to be happy, you want the producers to be happy, and you want everybody to be safe and feel like they've been treated right.
That makes sense. What about you, Martin?
Without just saying ditto, pretty much everything Mark said there. I like feeling that I've accomplished something. So taking the written word in a script and then 4, 6, 8 weeks later, you know, all that stuff that we've been planning and, you know, this work, will that work, you know, coming up with workarounds and figuring out all those details, and then to actually see it come to fruition, that's I still get a charge from that. So even after doing it for this long, that's still what keeps me going back, is just knowing that we can take some idea and through hard work and good ideas and solutions, coming up with a decent final product, that's still
making it actually happen.
It's fun to, you know, if you're playing with different eras and genres too, you know, where you can populate a street and make it look like I did a movie last year where it was like in the 60s. So we took a whole street and it was 1964, and you have all the cars and all the background. Like, it, you got to approach it with that mentality. It's like, well, how did people converse in public then versus now? And so, you know, that's one of the few creative outlets that we get as ADs, is to kind of have a hand in bringing those environments to life. I mean, you know, your production designers and art departments and props and stuff, they set deck, they do a great job of creating this world and background cast and costumed and stuff. But at the end of the day, until you breathe life into it, it's just a bunch of real cool stuff. So it's fun to be able to, you know, bring that whole world.
Design that?
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. So what drew you both originally to film? What's your origin story?
I mean, for me, as just a film nerd from the get-go, I just always, you know, I'm like one of 8 million people that have this story. So I know I'm not special, but when I saw Star Wars for the first time in the movie theater, I mean, that was life-changing for me. That was, okay. And it's just the ability to kind of escape somewhere else for a few hours. It's always been pretty cool to me. And so I've always thought, hey, that would be, you know, what a great way to get a job and be a part of that.
Not a bad gig.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about you, Martin?
Similar. I'm a scooch bit younger than Mark. Not by much, but a little bit. So instead of Star Wars, it was Empire Strikes Back for me. But what was funny was, like, I'd been going to movies and stuff since I was even younger than that. I was 8 when that came out. But what really turned it around was back in the olden days when we only had 4 channels. One of them was PBS, and they were playing a behind the scenes on how Empire Strikes Back was made. And that's when it finally, you know, when the light went on for me, was this, there were people doing this. Like, you know, it wasn't just stories. It was people could play make-believe and get paid to do it. And it looked fun and interesting and exciting. And I didn't know what I wanted to do when I saw that, but I knew I wanted to do something in that regard because it just looked like you get to play all the time. So that part of that was really cool.
So kind of going off of that, how did you guys find the AD department? Was it something that you had originally wanted to do? Clearly not for you, Martin, but how did you find that? And how did you kind of realize that that's kind of what you wanted to pursue?
Well, I mean, ADing, that wasn't the first choice. As with most people, when you know you want to be a filmmaker and you decide, well, I'm going to go to school and I'm going to learn how to do this, you probably want to be a director. So that's kind of where it started for me. But then as I kind of went through the program at SAIT that I went to in Calgary, kind of get a taste of a little bit of everything. And I kind of started, believe it or not, gravitating towards being a script supervisor. That seemed to, you know, scratch my itch. But then when I got out of school and, you know, tried to actually make a living, as with most people, if you're not making your own projects, you try to get work on other people's shows. So I worked as a PA, and again, it was an opportunity to kind of see what everyone else does. And that's when I started to gravitate towards ADing, because I thought it was pretty interesting how they seemed to have a command of everything that was going on and trying to keep it all on track. And so that's kind of where that started. And then, of course, more opportunities for me personally were to be found in that department. So that's kind of why I ended up gravitating towards that. And it just seemed to be the best use of my strengths in terms of organization and communication and stuff like that. So,
yeah, that's fair. And what about you, Mark?
Well, I kind of fell into it a bit. Like Martin, I went to SAIT as well. And I did AD a couple of projects there because no one else wanted to do it. They never do. You guys will learn. You'll see.
Well, they never really taught us how to do it. That's the one thing.
No. A lot of people's first jobs are as PAs on a set, and so as was mine. And they kind of find you, I think. A lot of ADs, they kind of...
No, that's true.
They'll kind of poach the PAs that they kind of like, and they'll draw you into the AD world. And so that's kind of what happened to me, and it kind of made sense to me, and it felt like it was going to be a decent fit, because I certainly wasn't going to be carrying sandbags and stuff up mountainsides and stuff. So it got me close to the camera, got me close to the director. Like Martin said, I had aspirations of directing like a lot of people do. And I thought this put me in the best position to kind of learn from those types of people. And I still maintain that. Anything where you want to be right near the camera, if you can't get a directing gig right out of school, it's great to be around that because you do kind of get in the sanctum a bit and you learn a lot of great stuff. You really do.
Yeah, for sure. You're right in the heart of it. So you get a lot of visibility into all the different roles for sure.
Yeah.
So what do you guys do to switch gears quickly to be able to work with new directors every episode or every block on a television project?
For me, I kind of learned to be a bit of a chameleon throughout the years with directors. There's some that are very big personalities. And so in that case, I'll go, okay, well, I need to step back a bit and not be the big voice in the room. And there's a lot of directors that are more introverted, you know, and they just kind of almost whisper directions to people. And so in that case, it's like, okay, I need to be a bigger presence. And so you kind of just learn it. It's such a weird concept because so many times, especially on a television series, director will airdrop in. You've never met them before. You maybe looked them up on IMDb and, you know, you spend an insane amount of hours with this person. Like, you know, it goes from 0 to 20 hours in a period of a week. And it's a very bizarre concept. I will say that most directors do make it easy because they've, you know, that's their life, especially television directors. Their life is bopping around the countries and continents and making projects. So the good ones have become quite adept at fitting in and just kind of going along with it. But you just, you know, you just have to kind of take your cues off of them. I think the most important thing for any director in working with them is to be honest with them and let them know kind of what the lay of the land is on the show. I don't get into the politics of it. There is always politics on shows, especially ones that have been up and running for a few seasons. And, you know, you just try to avoid that as much as possible because, you know, it's never going to serve any purpose and it's probably going to just make the situation worse. So I just try to be honest with them. I'll say, you know, this is kind of what you can expect on this show without getting into details with them. I'll, you know, give them a sense of what the cast are like and, you know, all the personalities just in broad strokes. And, you know, a lot of times we do these things called daily production reports. So every day of filming, they analyze how many shots we did. And at a glance, you can kind of tear it apart and kind of figure out how the day went. Usually I just didn't pay attention to them. We shot the day and we survived and on the go. But I've started to pay attention to them and get a sense of how many shots can we get in a day and, you know, under these conditions and that conditions. And then, you know, you can talk to a director and say, well, on average, this is what you can expect to film in a day. And kind of plan accordingly. Even taking like that time, because it's surprising as it is, I don't think a lot of assistant directors do that. And so I just try to make them comfortable and I try to show them through actions that I'm there to support them and give them what they need. And they usually respond quite favorably to that, you know. They just want someone they know that will help them when they're in trouble.
Yeah, that they can trust.
Yeah.
So you guys are kind of a go-between for the director and the producers. So how do you kind of play the dance of making sure that you're protecting the producers while still helping to achieve the creative vision of the directors?
I make Martin deal with it. It's gotten trickier. It seems like depending on the project, you'll have some producers that are very present and they'll be on set and very much aware of what's going on throughout the course of the day. And you know, that you can always have pinch points and you're going to have run into problems. And it's great when you have producers that are there that are kind of just, they're invested and, you know, you can go to them and there's a kinship and you guys figure it out. But that's not all shows. A lot of shows, the producers are off, you know, whether they're doing editing or casting, you know, because there's always another show in the queue getting prepped as you're shooting one. So you don't always have them there. And in that case, it can be messy at times, you know, if you're having problems on set, because they just, that extra step of them being removed from the process makes it very difficult. Because at the end of a film set, if you're falling behind, there can always be an explosive moment that causes it, but more likely than not, it's a death by a thousand cuts. It's, we waited for the clouds to come so we could get sun for 10 minutes. We had an airplane for 5 minutes. We had, you know, this and that. And so it's hard to kind of put in a context what's going on. And that's usually where it does fall to Martin to kind of try to bridge that gap. If we're behind schedule, I'm just trying to put my energy and time into getting us back on schedule. And me talking about the problems of the last, you know, 6 hours isn't going to help that. So that's where that week kind of falls onto Martin. But if everybody's been on the same page during prep, it's usually not too bad. Like we like to do, you know, ideally you'll do a schedule and you'll sit down with the director and the director of photography and you'll literally walk through every scene or parts of scenes. Like when you do a schedule, you might have a scene that we've parted into 8 different elements because there's going to be some visual effects elements, or, you know, we're doing a close-up of someone else later or whatever it is. But the goal going into shooting that is you've accounted for every minute of the shoot, saying, we think this is going to take 2 hours. We think this is going to take a half an hour. And then you total that up, and kind of everybody almost in a way signs off on that. The producers, the director, you know, the ADs. And so everybody goes, okay, well, barring anything hugely unforeseen, this is the show we're going to make, and we're going to make it in this much time. And so if everybody has clear eyes about that, it's usually something you can manage, because we all are on the same page. It's when you start production and everybody is on a different page that it's a nightmare the whole time. You never really do get it back. And, you know, there's lots of stuff that contribute to that. I mean, a lot of times you'll get scripts late. It's always a rush job at the end. And it feels like you're set up for success for the first, you know, 80% of prep. And then the last 20% is when it all comes to a head and you almost feel like you're starting over. And when it's really bad, that's what it's like. And then that's where, you know, usually it is someone like Martin is spending a lot of time on the phone with producers trying to explain what's going on if they're not present. And for directors, I just don't want them to worry about the time. I usually just say, you just concentrate on directing. And when I say it's time to start looking at the watch, then we start looking at the watch. But,
right,
you know, the best way to get out of trouble is to have your director focusing on that, not panicking because the producer's calling. There's a lot of just blocking the producers back for a bit, the faith that the director will get things together and you'll land the plane on time. Doesn't always work. And then you just deal with that however you do. But, you know, if you can kind of get it back, usually all is forgiven.
Right. So
we're a dysfunctional family of filmmakers.
So Martin, you guys obviously have to work together and you're working more closely with production, whereas Mark is working more closely with the director. So how do you personally like manage that by kind of protecting production and obviously having that separation from set? How do you work with Mark to make sure that everyone is getting what they need and kind of looking after the project?
Well, the same way that Mark tries to get the director to focus on directing, I try my best to get Mark to focus on running the floor. I try to ensure that everything that's required for both of those steps to happen is underway. So over time, I've definitely learned to not bother, not just Mark, but other first ADs with a bunch of inane details that they don't need to know. I try to keep everything moving forward so that when the time comes, they go on to set and are hopefully as flawless as possible. But at the same time, knowing when to inform Mark or the director or, you know, whomever about running into a bit of an issue with X. So you might want to do this or, you know, trying to come up with solutions as best I can until I can't. It's like, I've tried this and this and this, and none of that is seems to be working. So now I need to bring you into the fold and that kind of thing. So trying to shield is not the right term, but just trying to do my best to make sure that there's as few hiccups as possible.
For sure. So as students, we're often juggling the roles of all the AD department on a small project. There will be one AD. Mm-hmm. So what are the most important things to keep in mind in order to make the project run as successfully as possible?
To try and not only figure out what you need right now, but what you're going to need next. And to have both of those things going in tandem at the same time. So that once you accomplish one goal or finish one scene or finish one shot, you know what the next shot is or the next scene or the next bit is, so that it's always moving forward. I think that's probably what I would say is the most important thing, is to figure out whatever you need to figure out so that everything goes forward, so that there's no stops. That's the worst thing that can happen, is you have nothing to do. That's what you try to avoid at all costs.
Yeah, for sure. And what about you, Mark? What do you think?
Well, I think, you know, with a project where, you know, you just have the one AD, that usually lends itself to being a smaller crew overall. And, you know, what you want to do is want to take advantage of the stealthiness of a crew of that size. And so I think the biggest thing when you're a one-man band like that is making sure that you're on the same page as the director and the cameraman is, so that you guys are already speaking the same language and you're going to want to take advantage of the fact that, you know, you don't have to go through 8 checkpoints to get an answer. And, you know, you do some television commercials and they're a very lean model. And so the hard part is if you have talent that has to go through hair, makeup, wardrobe and stuff, usually you'll have a third assistant director to do that, kind of babysitting that whole process. So you kind of give that up a bit when it's just yourself. And so, you know, you just have to make sure that you have someone that you trust that is ensuring that's going underway so you can focus on set. And the show is made in prep and you're shooting it, you're just executing it and reacting to the changes that happen. So I think regardless of whether it's just one person or a whole team, as long as, you know, you're heading into that shoot feeling like all the questions that you need to have answered are answered. And Martin's point about having two things happening at the same time is very true. You want to always be moving forward and communicating to people that you're in the last shot of a scene, you know, just making sure that the people know that you're going to be moving forward and the expectation is we'll be doing something different shortly. So be prepared for that.
Having that communication.
Yeah.
I would echo what Mark said, especially in the school situation with only a 1 AD or commercials is, like I've always said, prep is the most important thing, but it's even more important then. Because like when the pressure's not on and you're sitting around a table and you're figuring out this and this and this and this and coming up with the plan, then like he said, it's just about executing it at that point. So prep has two meanings, pre-production and prepared. So you can be as prepared as possible before you hit the floor when the real pressure's on, you'll be that much better off being successful.
Yeah, for sure. So before I open it up to my friends, do you have any advice for people aspiring to be in your positions one day, you know, to people who are just getting started?
Boy, it's a tough one to let people know. Kind of going off of what Mark was saying there about poaching the best people, it's just making the right connections and having the right attitude and an air about yourself. And getting to know people. And for me, the first gig I got was because I would hang out at the Directors Guild office and I had no experience, but I'm just like, hey, you know, like, you know, if something comes up, you know, keep me in mind. And, you know, just constantly being a bit of a pest that way and then proving myself. And that's the only thing I can say is like, the second that that door is open for you, take advantage of it. And my first paid gig was as a PA in the art department. I didn't know anything about the art department, but I made sure I did the best I possibly could and just showed the most stamina that I could. And just like, I'm the one you want to do this. I'm the one that can be trusted to take the ball across the goal line. So, and you're constantly proving yourself. You never want to come across as if you know everything. Cause like the one beautiful thing about being a second AD, as I have been for so long, is working with not only different directors, but different first ADs and different producers. You learn so much, not only about what to do, but what not to do, which can almost be more lucrative than learning what to do, but you just definitely learn different ways. There's so many different ways to accomplish the goal that every time I learn something different, even just on the last project, the current project, I should say, that we're doing, every time there's something new and different and you just can't close yourself off from learning, I guess. So being open and proving yourself, I'd say those are the best ways you can do it.
Yeah. And I mean, I would say that it's not for the faint of heart, Nadine. You definitely have to love it. It's the one job, I think, on a film set where if you're doing it right, you're going to feel like you can never relax.
That's true.
There's always something you can never really shut down. You shut down when you get in your car at the end of the day and drive home.
Even then.
yeah, that's true. Yeah, when you're not having 5 phone calls or getting yelled at because you were overtime or whatever. It's great. It's a charmed life, really. Mm-hmm. You just got to take the good with the bad. And I think that anybody that is drawn into film overall, you got to love it to stick with it. You know, money is not enough. You give up a lot of yourself to these jobs, not just ADing, but anything in the industry. So once you've determined that, you know, I'm insane enough to stick with this as an AD, I think you just have to realize that there's a lot of stuff that happens in the heat of the moment. And at the end of the day, you can't take any of it too personally. It's a high stress game. And I mean, in the past, there's been, both me and Martin could probably tell you some horror stories about film sets, but it's gotten better. They've become a more humane work environment, thankfully. And if you want to be an AD, you just really just got to accept the fact that there's going to be a ton of challenges, but there's going to be a ton of great things that come out of it as well. Like, you get access to some of the most brilliant creative minds in the industry as an AD, you know. Like, I mean, I sit in vehicles scouting with people that have won all kinds of awards, and they have great stories, and it's just nice seeing something come to life. And you just have to realize that you're a key part of the process, and that's just a special thing to be a part of, and just don't take shit too seriously, and you'll be fine.
For sure. You guys are kind of like the beating heart of it all, keeping it all moving. So it's a very important job. So now I'm going to open it up to a few of my friends. Do you guys have any questions?
You always talk about that your main, like, core of your job is to make sure that there is no miscommunications, that everything is, the mission is going smoothly. The question is, what do you do when a miscommunication issue occurs, and how to deal, like, when there is a hiccup? And what areas do usually hiccups occur that we as students should pay especially attention to?
The most important thing on any film, regardless of the scope of it, is making sure that proper communication channels are followed. Some people will view it as kind of being control freaks, but the best chance to avoid any sort of, well, I thought you were doing that, is just to have everything filter through the AD department. You know, we're kind of the clearinghouse for it all. So your best chance at avoiding any sort of issues is just to kind of go through, ideally, the second AD, and they will direct that information wherever it needs to go. Whenever there is miscommunications, though, it usually takes a lot of people a while to figure this one out. But if something happens, 100%. You just own it. It's the best way to fix it. And the way that a lot of people in the industry work is, the longer you avoid something, the more it has a chance to grow and become something ridiculous that it never should have been. 10 times out of 10, if you say, I messed up, or this was missed, you know, there might be a couple moments of frustration, and that's fine. I mean, you know, it's important stuff that's been missed, but it's survivable. Usually it's survivable. And ideally, if you know that there's been a mess up, like, for example, if me and Martin hypothetically were working on a show and hypothetically forgot to pick up an actor, and we were going to talk about that to some hypothetical producer or director, we would already have a solution in hand with it as well. Yes. So yeah, you have an apology in one hand and a solution in the other. And, you know, you can usually survive it. I hate hallway meetings. There's a lot of hallway meetings during prep on shows. And so, you know, you'll have a director at the craft services area making a cup of coffee, and a props guy will come talk to him, and they'll talk about, oh yeah, and we're going to have this great prop. What do you think? And they'll walk away from that conversation. Martin doesn't know about it. I don't know about it. And the prop doesn't show up on the day. And so we put out reams of paper with breakdowns of everything that we know about in script and through meetings, and hope that that circumvents any issues. But quite often it doesn't. So, yeah.
I can do you one better. I didn't just forget to pick up an actor once, but on a show that Mark wasn't the first AD on, that I was working with somebody else, I had an actor in a totally different city, and he was required to work that night. Thankfully, he was only in Vancouver. Thankfully, he wasn't on another gig. And thankfully, the show had the kind of money where they could do a last minute flight. But again, it's like, hopefully you've got the kind of work ethic where your first instinct isn't to, well, it's this guy's fault for forgetting this, or somebody should have noticed, blah, blah, blah. If you just take it on and say, I screwed up, I'm sorry, you know, and then just take it from there, it's way better to deal with than to try and just get the blame thrower out and aim it at whoever's in your way. I mean, typically you'd think that'd be a fireable offense, but somehow I ended up finishing that show even in spite of that. But yeah, you definitely want to take ownership of any of your errors. And I usually try to say to people, it's fine to make a mistake. Just make sure you don't do the same mistake twice. You want to be able to learn from them, for sure. So
yeah. And another big thing that happens quite often when you're prepping is, if a movie has a couple of key events, you find that a lot of energy and time gets spent just pinning those down and getting those sorted, and those go off without a hitch. But it's because you spent so much time and energy on those specific things, it's the more banal day-to-day things that get missed. So it's important to spend all that energy on the big ticket items. It's the scene where, you know, some guy's supposed to pull up in a car and go and make a phone call on a payphone or something, and you know, you've forgotten to get the car because it's been there all week, but then you just assumed it was there. And the second AD does up the call sheet and it breaks down everything for the next day and props and every little departmental note. I always just go through that with Martin or whoever the second AD is. And if there's anything where you kind of learn after a while what often gets missed. And so, you know, I'll be like, hey, have you talked to so-and-so to make sure they have that? And nowadays with tech, it's so easy. I mean, it takes, you know, 15 seconds to fire off a text to a props guy saying, hey, did you remember that so-and-so for tomorrow? So I think the day before is always a great opportunity just to give a cursory glance at what's coming down the pipe the next day. And a lot of times too, it'll be a trigger. It's like, oh yeah, did I talk to so-and-so about that? And, but yeah, it's things get missed and just, yeah, you own it and life goes on kind of thing.
Totally fair.
Or you blame the second.
Yeah, exactly. It's all Martin's fault. Yeah, I mean, he's the one putting together the call sheet.
Exactly.
Come on.
Yep.
You actually kind of already answered it. I was just going to ask, like, what, like, a common thing that can go wrong, like, for in regards to what you're in charge of, or what's the worst thing that's happened? And I assume that would be the hopping across the city casually the day of shooting.
Yeah, there's some doozies. There's some stories, for sure, that are out there. But, you know, the other thing, too, with ADs is, like, the film industry has become, for the longest time, it was kind of operated in a gray area where, you know, it wasn't like a heavy industrial operation that is completely got occupational health and safety and all of these different entities overseeing it. We've kind of operated in this, we don't really fit anywhere kind of world. And it's gotten better, especially in like Ontario or British Columbia. There's actual like film industry work safe programs in place. And, you know, at the end of the day, it kind of rests with AD department to keep everybody safe, do safety meetings and then go through, you know, risk assessments and all that stuff. And it's gotten to the point now because there's so many corporations that own all the studios and networks and streamers and stuff that they don't want to be exposed to a liability that hasn't been there in the past. It's kind of just, there's been a lot of, let's hope this works, no one dies, which is terrible. So there's this whole other layer now of safety that has become a real concern for everybody to the point now where, you know, you have to have, like, I'm always looking to train myself. Like I'll take firearm safety courses or special effects safety courses. Like I take them because I need to know what is safe so that if I see something that is bad for me on a set, I can go to whomever and say, I just want to double check. Is that cool? Cause,
right. You have the knowledge to enforce a safe set.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you know, if something goes bad on a set, you're the first person that they go to. And yeah, I have to have answers. And, you know, and I think that going forward, you're going to see a lot more on film sets. We're seeing it now with coming back to work with COVID. You know, we have actual COVID safety departments now. Once COVID is gone, I would expect to see maybe a variation on some sort of safety representative on set on a full-time basis, because we have to go at such a fast rate of speed to get this stuff shot nowadays that you kind of have this awkward deal that you make with yourself where it's like, I have to keep things safe, but I also have to get this thing shot. And it's not a great position to put anybody in. So I think going forward, I think you'll see a little bit of separation between that. And AD's got enough to think about without knowing
that being. For sure. So before we wrap this up, I did ask you guys to prepare a few film recommendations. So Martin, do you want to kick it off and give me your recommendations?
Yes. My favorite movie of all time is Say Anything. I just find it really honest. And if I ever am able to make a feature of my own, I'd like to emulate something like that. I just like the way the characters interact with one another and the almost the simplicity of the way it's put together. I love it for that reason, that it's something that I'd want to make. And then my other favorite movies are Back to the Future and Raiders of the Lost Ark. The undertaking to try and do those as an AD would be huge, and that there'd be a lot of things to consider in that regard. But as a fan, those are things I love to watch. I don't know if I necessarily want to make them. Like, I'm a big fan of the MCU movies. I love to watch them, but to make them, I'd go insane. They showed a picture of what the circus looked like during Infinity War. And just seeing all of the trailers, I was just like, this is insane. The amount of people that are involved and egos and on and on and on and on and on. And that would be crazy. But as far as like favorite movies, those are my go-tos all the time.
Where would you put the trucks?
Yeah, exactly.
They'd always be in the shot. There's so many of them.
Oh, man. That's why it's all green screen. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, true. What about you, Mark? What are some of your favorites?
I'm a big fan of Goodfellas. There's just a lot that I think is great in that movie. You know, technically, I think it's a great movie to watch, from the famous Steadicam Oneer into the nightclub to, you know, it does a great job of tying different eras together with music, but not in a real self-aware way. As a film, like, to be studied, there's a lot of really great stuff to watch there. And it's a highly entertaining film. For me, it's as close to a perfect film as I've seen. It just kind of ticks every box for me. It's funny, you know, I've been watching a lot of older movies during the COVID thing, and it's just interesting stuff that I was blown away by when I was younger. I'm kind of like, oh, let's get on with it. But Goodfellas is one, I didn't watch it during the lockdown, but it's definitely one I've seen probably about 25 times. And
it just always stands up.
Yeah. But Jaws, I just watched Jaws, which is, I think, a great movie for what we're talking about, because that's the show where, you know, they went in with a plan and it was to shoot this shark, and then the shark didn't work. Kept on breaking down, and they still had to shoot this movie, and they were under huge pressure because they thought there was going to be an actor strike, and so there's this enormous pressure to get this movie done. And they embraced the fact the shark didn't work, and is a much better movie for it. So I love that, where it's like they took a negative and flipped it and made it a positive. Nowadays, it just do a visual effects shark, and it would just be just another show. I just watched Do the Right Thing again a couple days ago. It's so timely still, and it kind of blew me away, a lot of the stuff that they were talking about. This is like 30 years ago this movie was made, and there's a scene where there's these three old boys on the corner talking about climate change. Like, it's, you know, it's crazy to think that that's still relevant. And there's just a great use of colors in the frames to show emotion, and it's a lot of good stuff in that movie. It's just kind of classic Spike Lee, really. Sicario, I watched. That's a great movie as well. If you're a fan of cinematography, that's Deakins punching at his full weight. Great use of color and lighting in that movie as well.
The sequence at the border is like a clinic on storytelling, visual storytelling. It's amazing.
Yeah, I know. Like, DVDs were so valuable to me. The making, the behind the scenes stuff that you would get on DVDs and stuff. I learned so much about filmmaking from a lot of those, you know, features and director commentaries and stuff. It's the one shame with that format going away is if you could afford to rent a DVD, you could afford to go to film school, basically. You know, if you can dust off the old DVD player and get your hands on some stuff, I can't recommend that enough. There's reams of information out there that you just latch onto, and it's great stuff. And I mean, you're learning from the masters, and it's there, it's all there. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you both so much for coming on the show. And thank you to those of you who asked questions. I really appreciate you talking about your experiences and how you've worked together over the years. I think it's been really educational, but also you guys are just lovely to talk to. But that is all for this episode of Film Kid Asks. Be sure to subscribe and feel free to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or join our Facebook group. New episodes come out every Saturday.